Welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. I'm your host, Rima Katz. In today's episode, we shine a spotlight on a significant development, the CFPB's proposed data sharing rulemaking update under Dodd-Frank 1033. While the proposed regulations primarily delve into data sharing standards and the principles of data privacy for intermediaries like aggregators, it's crucial to recognize the pivotal role that financial institutions play in this landscape. Joining me today to discuss this is Kevin Hughes, Director of Aggregation Solutions at Fiserv, and Matt Gaughan, Payments Analyst at Javelin Strategy and Research. They're going to speak to the impact this update has on banks and credit unions of all sizes, and the steps that FIs need to take to ensure compliance, and most importantly, secure their customers' data. To set the stage first, Kevin, what are the highlights of the CFPB's proposed 1033 update?
Sure. I think when we look at it overall at a high level, we can look at specific things and how they provide different levels of value to the different participants in the overall aggregation market. So when we think about, for example, from the consumer standpoint, it's offering a lot of transparency as well as control to the consumer about through the consent process, through the visibility as to, you know, what they're consenting to share and with whom. It eliminates the need for consumers to share their credentials with third parties. I mean, that's a really large objective here. And by doing so, it creates an infrastructure that has data connectivity that's more reliable and more secure overall. The data source or the bank or credit union standpoint, if we think about the way the market works today, this activity is happening, but the banks and credit unions have no visibility into what's going on. They don't have the details. They don't have any control. And part of this proposed rule is that banks and credit unions will have more visibility into what their customers are doing and who they're sharing data with, and on being able to control the scope of data. For aggregators in this community, there's a lot of different ways, obviously, to get data, but it really provides standardization of access methods and standardization of the data set so that not only are there no surprises, essentially, but at the same time, there's a higher level of reliability and a higher level of data completion, if you want to call it that, but a full set of data that's required for, you know, to support particular use cases. So I think if we look at it from the standpoint or the viewpoint of the various participants in the market, it's interesting just to see how it provides a different level of value, but very, very strong levels of value for each of those participants.
Yeah, and I would just add to that that I think standardization is the real big thing here. You know, there's, Kevin touched on this a little bit. There's currently kind of disparate access to financial data at banks across the country. The banking market in general is pretty fragmented here. There's, I believe, over 9,000 banks and credit unions across the country. It could even be a little more than that. And really, what has happened is in the absence of a system like in the UK, where there's a lot less banks and the government could have a little more involvement in it, those financial data aggregators have filled that gap. And basically what the CFPB is doing, that these rule changes will bring consistency to the industry and just make it easier for banks across the board to utilize some of these different data solutions and not rely on some of those less secure options like screen scraping.
Well, and at the same time, as Matt was mentioning, one of the other key things here is, you know, when we look at another kind of participant in the market are the fintechs, you know, and the organizations, the applications that use the data. And what this also does is helps to create an environment that can adapt to different use cases or different uses for the data without requiring a complete rewrite of something or a completely manual process. And I think that's important for everybody because, you know, we look at what consumers gain by sharing their data. They're gaining access to a true open finance ecosystem. We know that just from those of us who've been in the industry for a while know that the way this ecosystem looks today is very different than how it looked 5 years ago and will continue to evolve that way. And I think one of the ancillary benefits here is that this provides a framework which allows the industry to continue to grow and continue to offer different financial applications or different financial insight availability to consumers overall.
Kevin, how does this rule update impact banks and credit unions specifically?
Well, as I mentioned before, you know, one of the challenges of this process. And as I mentioned, it's a process that goes on anyway, right? It's something that's happening behind the scene. But when you think about how it happens today, it kind of happens under the radar in a lot of cases, particularly smaller banks and credit unions that don't necessarily have the bandwidth to enter into data access agreements with everyone and support an API environment and do all these different things. They don't necessarily have the visibility into what their customers or members are doing and who they're sharing data with. And I think what it does is also provides the security infrastructure to eliminate the need for those customers to share credentials in order to connect their account. And by doing that, it just in general provides a better consumer experience overall. One of the challenges that we hear from a lot of banks is a customer will call their customer service center right at the bank and say, I want to connect my account at our bank to this particular application. I can't do it or it's not working. And the banks are saying, we can't help you. We don't know where the issue is. We don't have relationships with these different parties. We don't know where that traffic's coming from. We can't see any of this. And I think when we look at this overall, it also provides a level of that visibility that this is going to provide that banks and credit unions are going to have is going to give them really more tools to get insight to, as well as to service their customers better overall. While they can comply with the, you know, when we think about the original 1033 update, which talked about data availability and that the data belongs to the consumer and that it should be shared and made available for sharing. And banks, historically, in some cases, have really balked at that because of the security issues. And I think this eliminates those and gives them a nice runway in order to be able to provide that.
Yeah, and just to piggyback on that, too, I think one big impact it could have, too, is just adopting some of these FDX compliant, that's the financial data exchange compliant API technology standards, you know, allows for an interoperable framework upon which a growing universe of different products and services can exist. So this is especially important for some of the smaller banks, which, as we noted, have less resources available to them to provide some of these emerging products and services. So really what this allows them to do is to provide those open banking APIs that are more common at the larger banks.
Yeah, and what it's interesting, Mac, is what we're hearing from the fintech side is someone has a great application that offers a lot of value to a consumer, let's say in a financial wellness or planning or whatever the use case might be. And obviously, they want it to be accessible to consumers at, you know, the top 100 banks in the country. But at the same time, it still delivers value to the consumer of the small credit union in, you know, the Midwest. And by doing this and putting the standardization in place, it allows consumers who are customers of banks and credit unions of all sizes, it creates a scalable environment that gives them kind of equal access to those types of applications. And I think ultimately, as we move forward, that's going to be critically important to customers across. So I, just as an aside, I've been talking to a lot of banks in there. They've had customers who have left their bank and gone to a larger institution because the connectivity to a particular application was so important to them. And they really don't want to lose consumers over that. In some cases, they just haven't had an opportunity to do anything else. And this provides them the ability to deliver services of all types to their consumers and keep those consumer relationships.
Kevin, can you speak to how much time banks and credit unions will have to comply?
Yeah, it's interesting. So the proposed rule provides a time frame of 4 years for full compliance across the whole banking ecosystem. And that timeline is kind of tiered based on the size of the institution, the asset size of the institution. The challenge with that, obviously, is that 4 years for, you know, the smallest of institutions, when you really think of it, isn't that long of a time period because of the planning that needs to be involved. 1 year certainly is a very short time frame for a lot of institutions. So I think what's really going to be important here is that organizations not necessarily wait until their kind of tier is up in terms of a deadline, but that they start the planning process now. And I think what we've heard from a number of organizations that they're starting to get inquiries, for example, from regulators who are asking, like, what is your plan to comply here? What are you planning to do? What conversations are you having? And I think even if we look at the full time frame, even though an institution's not required under 1033 to have this implemented for 4 years, the value that's being delivered, as I talked about earlier, is so significant that they really should look at complying before that time frame, you know, before their tier is due, essentially. But right now, the proposed rule is anywhere from 1 to 4 years from the publication date.
Yeah, I think banks across the board really just have to do a unpacking of what it is exactly that, what resources they have available to them, both technological expertise, financial, and really just understand how they would go about, you know, implementing some of these changes. You know, as Kevin's saying, you know, larger might be affected more quickly. Smaller, I think, might have some more time. And I think community banks and credit unions, if they don't have a digital interface, might even be exempt from the rule. I think, you know, once that's finalized, we would know more on that. But I think what's most important is really just understanding what it is that your bank needs. Some of those direct access strategies that Kevin had mentioned might not make sense for a smaller financial institution. And, you know, there's different options available to those smaller institutions, whether or not that's a middleware solution from, you know, one of the core providers like Fiserv, or another portion of middleware, but integrated platforms as a service, which is more fully managed. They'll help with the implementation as well as the maintenance of the platform, API platforms going forward. I think these are just questions that they need to be asking themselves. And then once they have those answers, then they can start moving forward.
Yeah, I think they need to start to think about what options are available and start the evaluation of those options, because they're going to need many cases to make a decision and set a strategic path soon. And I think that as soon as they can do that, it's going to be better for them and better for their consumers and, you know, be in compliance.
Kevin, you touched upon this already a bit, but can you dive a bit deeper in terms of like the options that are out there for banks and credit unions? Like, what are the pros that they should be like looking at?
I think when we look at what some of the larger banks have done, and this is a conversation that I've had with the CFPB and others over time, it's really about the scalability of kind of what's in place. And we've seen a lot of the larger institutions develop their own infrastructure. That's not typically scalable to, you know, smaller institutions. They obviously have the option, if they want, to develop and maintain a direct data access agreement with a third party. I think most organizations of various sizes would put that option aside just because of the cost that it involves. But I think where we're seeing the market emerging, and we're seeing this at Fiserv, we're seeing it through other providers, you know, service providers, is the ability to offer kind of a platform within the banking system that gives the banks the ability to adopt and plug into a framework rather than developing their own framework. And I think the key there is making this a scalable option for them. You know, like I said before, some of these banks and credit unions may only have a few dozen customers who want to make these connections. And when you look at kind of the return on an investment of developing and maintaining a proprietary API environment, they're not going to get a return on that. So I think it's going to be critically important as we move forward that the service providers, you know, meaning the organizations that provide banking services, you know, provide these platforms, extend that to include products and services that are 1033 compliant as we see this infrastructure move ahead.
Yeah, and those partnerships will be really important for, yeah, across the board, but especially for some of those smaller to medium-sized financial institutions, and really have their benefits beyond just those initial connections as well. So, you know, smaller banks are going to be able to benefit from some of those different value-added services that some of these financial data aggregators are building out, things like loan decisioning or maybe even fraud mitigation tools, things along those lines that can be pretty crucial to helping them provide good services to their customers. And it also, you know, helps ensure the acceptance of some more of their traditional products as well. You know, if as younger generations are more widely utilizing open banking or different fintechs to transact, having these connections available to them helps ensure the acceptance of those traditional card products at some of these different locations. And to piggyback off of what Kevin was saying, core providers like Fiserv are really starting to step up and provide these data layers that help enable these API connections that connect customers to some of these third-party services. So those partnerships are, you know, are going to be very important.
Yeah, I just want to emphasize what Matt just said in the partnership component here, because it's a connected ecosystem anyway, and it has never really operated in a vacuum, so to speak. But the partnerships and kind of everybody having the same expectations and the same connectivity, we've really focused a lot of our time and attention on developing and formalizing those partnerships. And with that, we can deliver a lot of value through those partnerships to the banks and credit unions that we particularly service. And I know we're not alone in doing that. There are others, other service providers that are doing that as well.
And I believe you guys just had a big partnership with Plaid recently, right?
To provide... Yeah, we've done partnerships with all the major aggregators that are, you know, engaged in, you know, work that we're doing to provide that level of connectivity to the banks and credit unions that we host. But yes, you're correct. We did a partnership with Plaid specifically.
Kevin and Matt, thank you so much for sharing your insights and perspective. And thanks to everyone for tuning in today. Be sure to subscribe and stay updated on the latest Payments Journal episodes. And don't forget to share this podcast with your friends and colleagues.